I can't believe you asked me that.
You know what I mean?
Everyone, happy May, month of May. This is Dr. Carla Wills Brandon welcoming you to a walk to the other side. As you old-time listeners know, this is the show that puts a dent, that's right, a dent into the death phobia running wild in our society. It's enough to make me spit. Death is really nothing to fear. But in our youth-obsessed, age-phobic society, all of us think we have to run out for Botox. No, not so. And on this show, we talk about why you don't. Our departed loved ones, they haven't left us. They are still here for us. We just don't know how to communicate with them. I'll give you information about the afterlife that your clergy won't touch with a 10-foot pole. On this show, we safely discuss, without ridicule, the experiences everyday people are having with their departed loved ones on the other side. I just finished bringing up some more grub for my youngest child who's going through a growing spurt, and I noticed an advertisement for Ghost Whisperer, or was it Medium? The Blonde, Medium. And they were talking about how Kelsey Grammer was going to be representing death. And I thought, oh my gosh, do we have to go through this again? Is this going to be one of those scary, scary representations of the angel of death? And when will Hollywood get a grip? And I saw a little interview with Kelsey Grammer, and he talked about how his character is a kind of loving, fun, sort of fuzzy character, and I thought, oh my goodness sakes, they're getting it partially right this time. So yes, in my ever-ending pursuit to battle Hollywood and the misinformation that they put out there in order to grab the big bucks, this is a little teeny tiny show that that says it can. A friend of mine recently, she lost her husband. I mean, for me, I'm kind of known as the deaf woman in my circles, and so whenever anybody has a loss, usually I'm there with them and talking to them and listening to them, because oftentimes in our culture the belief is when somebody passes, well, you have the funeral and it's a done deal. You slap those hands together and you pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you get on with life. How many of you out there know that it can take as long as 7 years to get over a loss? Even if you have a hardcore belief in the afterlife, there is still going to be that sense of missing them in skin, as my youngest says. Well, anyway, this husband of hers, he was a big burly guy, Vietnam vet. He was incredible. He was like a gentle bear. I don't know how else to describe him. And he was seriously dedicated to helping other people. And so his death was very, very sudden. Took everybody by surprise. But when I saw her, I asked her how she was doing. You know what her response was? She said, "I'm fine. He's on vacation, you know, getting a break from me." They had a very passionate relationship. And then she looked at me and she smiled. She said, "You know, we'll be together someday. I miss him terribly, but know that he has some things to do over there and he expects me to do something useful with the rest of my life here. So I'm going to take his advice." And she shed some tears and she got kind of sad, and I gave her a hug and told her I was here for her, and she'll have her tears when she needs to. That's the one thing our society doesn't want us to do. That we're supposed to just move on. When your tears come up, gang, when you miss somebody, when you experience a loss, the physical body produces tears for a reason. Don't stuff them. Take some private time and grieve your loss. If you have had an unusual afterlife encounter, email me at drsbrandon@sbcglobal.net. That's drsbrandon, D-R-S-B-R-A-N-D-O-N. Also, we here at BBS Radio have a new worldwide number, for people wishing to call into the program live. And the new number is 877-876-5227. Yes, it works worldwide. Okay, before we talk about Mother's Day and the contact many of my readers have made with their departed mothers, let's look a little bit more in the news. There's plenty, plenty, plenty of it. How many of you guys know who Brad Steiger is? If you don't know who Brad Steiger is, you are really missing out. He and his wife, Sherry, have been writing books about the paranormal for eons and eons and eons. They've consulted with some of the better television programming that talks about the paranormal. And he recently wrote an awesome article. And this might take some of you by surprise, especially if there are any skeptics out there. I hope some of you skeptics are listening. And the title of his article is Smart People See Ghosts. Higher Education Supports Belief in the Paranormal. Who would have thought? And this was in the April 2006 issue of Fate Magazine. I'm sure you can go to Fate Magazine online and get a copy of the full article. I'm not going to go through every little bit of it, but I did want to share some interesting findings with you. According to a new study of higher education, it was discovered that higher education is linked to a greater tendency to believe in ghosts and other paranormal phenomena. Now, this actually, it took me by surprise, since I'm around so many of these brainy types all of the time who are busy scoffing and coughing every time I say the word, ooh, deathbed vision. Even though researchers had expectations of findings contrary to results, their poll of college students found that seniors and graduate students were more likely to believe in haunted houses, ghosts, telepathy, spirit channeling, and other paranormal phenomena, much more so than were freshmen. Well, that kind of knocked my socks off. I found that incredibly interesting. And guess what? The skeptics are confounded. I am so shocked. Although the results of the survey are not surprising to long-time researchers in the metaphysical psychic field, what is startling is the fact that the poll analysis is published, dun-da-da-da, drum roll, in my all-time favorite magazine, the January-February issue of the Skeptical Inquirer magazine. The Journal of True Believers. I'm going to tell you a quick story. When my first book on deathbed visions came out, I was invited to do Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. And one of the Skeptical Inquirer's most prominent
You have a caller?
Yes.
Do you want me to put her on the air?
Sure.
You got it.
Hello? Hello?
Hello, Carla.
Yes?
This is your friend from Longview, Texas. We're listening to your show on XM Radio.
Oh, hi. How are you?
These
are my
buddies.
Huh?
We're listening. We're loving your show. And we wanted to wish you a happy Mother's Day, too.
Well, thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience.
This is Joanne Lewis, and I have, hang on, I'll give you the only one, Leon Lewis. Hang on.
These are the Lewises. Hello, Leon.
Hello, sweetie.
How are you?
I thought you were talking live.
I am, sweetie. You're on the air. You're being broadcast all over the universe right now.
To be coming up.
Well, thanks, you guys, for calling. I really, really appreciate
it. We're listening to your show.
I hope.
Goodbye.
Pardon?
I'll catch up with you later.
Okay, sweetie. Happy Mother's Day to Joanne, too, and you guys be sweet. It's always good to have buddies give you a call. Okay, well, let's go back to my little story here. I was supposed to do Politically Incorrect with a character known as the Amazing Randy. He's a magician, and he was going to come on the show and debunk me. I had just put out my first book on the Departing Visions of the Dying, and had included some research in there, kind of sort of trying to break the ice get the information out there in the public arena. And thankfully, he did not show. But let me tell you something. On the Skeptical Inquirer board, I got ripped up one side, ripped down the other. So I find it incredibly interesting that the Skeptical Inquirer magazine has published my buddy Brad Steiger's article. Okay, while the poll may have been conducted with expectations of demonstrating that as students become more educated, they drop questionable beliefs in favor of more skeptical attitudes, the Skeptical Inquirer must be congratulated. You know, and I've got to pat them on the back, too. Who would have thought I'd ever be saying that? For publishing the results that they really did not wish to find. These folks, they worked their little tookuses off trying to show the rest of us that anything that has to do with the paranormal is a bunch of bunk and not worthy of rigorous scientific investigation. The results of the poll discovered that gaining more education was not a guarantee of skepticism or disbelief toward the paranormal. Now, this actually, within the public arena, is the belief that those people who are interested in the paranormal, interested in near-death experiences, interested in channeling, mediums, afterlife contact, well, we must all be a bunch of bozos on crack who don't have any education and we don't have any teeth. While only 23% of the freshmen quizzed professed a belief toward paranormal concepts, the figures rose to 31% for college seniors and 34% for graduate students. Isn't that interesting? It just goes up the grade with graduate students. The complete results of the survey may be found in the January-February issue of the Skeptical Inquirer. Let's take a look at the number, the percentages of those polled with regard to belief. Okay, so these are college seniors and graduate students. Are you ready for this? This blew me away. 56% of them said that they had a belief in spiritual healing. 28% said they had a belief in ESP. 40% had a belief in haunted houses. 39% had a belief in ghosts and spirits of the dead. Okay, these are graduate students, gang. Telepathy, 24%. Clairvoyance and prophecy, 24%. Communication with the dead, 16%. Astrology, 17%. Witches, 26% believed in witches. Reincarnation, 14%. Channeling, 10%. Now, I want you guys, look at this. Okay, what is on the television right now? We have Medium. We have Ghost Whisperer. We have John Edwards. We have Sylvia Brown hawking her stuff. Okay, but these students, only 10% of them actually believed in channeling. But a whopping 56% believed in psychic and spiritual healing. Go figure. So, anyway, I thought that that was just absolutely fabulous. Fabulous, 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 Brad. He's probably doing his own show. He doesn't have time to listen to me. Why disbelief by skeptics? Let's take a look at this. Why are the skeptics fighting so hard to not have this stuff scientifically, rigorously investigated? I mean, in my own neck of the woods, with regard to the deathbed visions, which have been looked at and looked at and looked at, it is so difficult. I gave up talking to skeptics. I just don't talk to them anymore. If they want to argue with me, I don't find it necessary to argue with them. If they want to provide me with some interesting ideas or theories or situations or instances to look at, wow, that's great. But if they just want to slam dunk me, boy, let me tell you something. It's a waste of my time. Why do the skeptics find it so difficult to believe that individuals who achieve a higher education may still maintain a belief in the paranormal? Well, of course they have to have a reason for this. The world of the paranormal is one where effect often sets up, what does this mean? Where mind often influences matter, where individuals communicate over great distances without physical aids, and where the spiritual essence of those deceased may be seen. Oh, I see what they're saying. Okay, so they're just kind of laying it out that they're describing what the paranormal is. Why, especially in an age of new theories embracing quantum theory, physics and other dimensions, should skeptics find it difficult to believe in a world that lies beyond the five senses and the present reach of science? If you talk to a serious physicist who really is looking into quantum physics, they aren't as skeptical as some of these other folks who just don't even want to take a look at this stuff. Well, what my buddy Brad says is that for those of us who have been researching and writing in the paranormal, UFO, and spiritual fields for many years, and gang, he has been involved in this arena for a long time, the repeated allegation that we and our readers must be undereducated and unaware of the science and technology of our contemporary culture becomes very annoying. Contrary to common assumption, intelligence has little connection to paranormal abilities or beliefs. Neither is it the odd or poorly adjusted members of society who most often demonstrate high degrees of psychic ability. Quite the contrary appears to be true. Those individuals who are well adjusted socially and who are possessed of an extroverted rather than an introverted personality are the ones who consistently score higher in EPS tests. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Here's a newsflash for you. As a clinician, when I get somebody in the office who starts talking about having contact with relatives on the other side or contact with guides or with angels, these are people who are educated. They come from all walks of life. They are not living under a bridge somewhere drinking Mad Dog 2020. These are folks who typically don't want other people to know what's going on. They don't advertise, and they're very cautious about talking. The January 12, 1994 issue of U.S. Today carried the results of a survey conducted at which stated that more than two-thirds of the U.S. population has had at least one mystical experience. So if two-thirds of us in this country have had these experiences, why isn't anybody coughing up the dough for people like me to do the research that I want to do, that Brad wants to do, that Bruce Grayson wants to do, that my buddy Dr. Jeffrey Long wants to do? What is the problem? Furthermore, although only 5% of the population have such experiences often, that's around 15 million people, such mystical encounters seem to be getting more common with each successive generation. And very interestingly, this particular researcher added, individuals active in mainstream churches or synagogues report fewer mystical experiences than the general population. Let me tell you something. I'm Jewish. And I tried to put together a proposal to do a book on the mystical experiences that individuals within my own religion had encountered. Do you know I got turned down flat? Nobody would even look at me. So are the tables turning? Another survey that should have offered an enormous amount of proof that one can achieve a higher education and still believe in the paranormal was released on December 20th, 2004. This really, really, all the hair on the back of my neck stood up when I heard this, revealing that 74% of medical doctors believe that miracles have occurred in the past, and 73% believe that miracles can occur today. 67% of the doctors encouraged their patients to pray. 59% admitted that they themselves prayed for their patients. Now, what's so interesting about this is that kind of weaving in and out of the medical community an awful lot. Docs will talk and nurses will talk on a one-to-one about having these experiences. But you get a whole herd of them together and nobody says a word. Nobody says a word. All of a sudden everybody shuts down and gets quiet. Michael Shermer. Now, this is the guy, if you're ever watching like the Learning Channel or the Discovery Channel and they're doing some show on afterlife experiences, near-death experiences, premonitions, channeling, mediums. This is the character who always comes on to go poo-poo-poo on all of it. Okay, so Michael Shermer, the talking head who represents the skeptical view in dozens of television documentaries each year and author of Why People Believe Weird Things and editor of The Skeptical Inquirer, was among those who deplored the findings. Of course he deplored them. Deplored the findings that such a high percentage of Americans accepted the reality of ESP. In Shermer's analysis, such statistics posed a serious problem for science educators, complaining that people too readily accepted the claim of pseudoscience. I hate that term. Shermer concluded in his regular column for the Scientific American, August 12, 2002, by stating that for those lacking a fundamental comprehension of how science works.
We have another caller.
Sure.
Put him on.
Okay. The siren song of pseudoscience becomes too alluring to resist, no matter how smart you are. Hello.
Hello. This is Betty in Corpus Christi.
How are you, Betty? This is family night. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm listening to your radio show right now.
Oh, it's good to hear from you, girl. Betty, she makes awesome quilts. Awesome, awesome quilts. I hope she's got her sewing room set up. You have your sewing room set up?
No, not yet. Still trying to get other things opened.
Okay. Well, let me know when you get it set up.
I will. Your show tonight was supposed to be about contacts with your mother.
Yes, and that's coming up in 2 seconds.
Well, I have a story to tell you about my mother contacting me after she passed away.
Well, why don't you go ahead and share that, because we're going right into that after this segment. Why don't you go ahead
okay.
and share us that with us that story?
Okay. Okay, I will. She passed away in October of 1988, and she had battled cancer for 25 years, but she died in the end of a heart failure. And 2 or 3 years, I can't remember exactly, before she passed away, she chose to be baptized Mormon, which surprised some of us in the family, but it was her choice. She had always given each of us kids the respect of our own decisions and what we chose to do in our life. So we did the same, even though maybe it wasn't the religion that we had chosen. And
well, that's
when
really
she passed
true,
away,
you guys.
I didn't know very much about the Mormon religion. One of my sister-in-laws was Mormon, and I'd gone to church a few times, and that was it. His sister-in-law pulled me to the side and said, "We have a custom within our religion of dressing the dead. It is an honor. It is an honor to be chosen to help.
Yes,
it is to be done with great humility. We do not want someone who doesn't revere this situation to be dressing a loved one. You don't have to participate in this, but your mother understood that this would be done, and you might want to consider if you want to participate." And she gave me a little time to think about it, thank goodness, because initially I was horrified. I thought I would have to obviously touch and help with my mother for her presentation in her casket. And it was hard enough choosing the casket. It was hard enough choosing the outfit. How in the world was I going to have the strength to do this, to honor her in this way, her chosen religion, to be at the side of my sister-in-law during this ceremony? And I was scared. I said yes.
Good for
you. And it was very hard to say yes, and I was extremely nervous about it. And we arrived at the church, I mean at the, it was at the mortuary, and my sister-in-law and I had gone through my mother's things and picked out her makeup and the way she did her hair, things she used to do her hair, and of course her clothing was very important. And when I stepped into the room, there was two other wonderful Mormon ladies there that belonged to my mother's church and knew my mother and were extremely pleased to meet me for the first time. And I just knew I was going to bolt from the room. We all walked in together to where my mother was on a table, and I just knew I was going to run away. And I just said, oh, Mom, please forgive me if I cannot do this. Just try. Try to give me some strength or let me go. And the ladies bowed their heads. At the same time I was saying this, asking for help, the ladies bowed their heads. And I assumed that they were saying a prayer. And all of a sudden, it was okay. I knew that it was okay.
And you just felt that.
Strength all of a sudden, and I felt my mother touching me on my shoulder. And from that moment on, I was able to tell them, no, she wore her hair a little bit this way.
And you were able to call the shots.
Yeah, and this is the lipstick that she would wear with this dress. And I do not know where that strength came from. I assumed from that day on that it was my mother. Some people would say it would be God, but I think it was my mother. There were two other times in my life when I was very shaky and didn't think I could do something that was extremely emotionally hard. And when I asked her to give me a little bit of her strength, it happened. And so now, you know, always, like you said, nobody talks about this. Nobody
speaks up. No, they don't.
I shared it with my husband. And oddly enough, when we were through with the ceremony, and got away from that presence, I was again weak and shaky and trembling. And my strength that had been given to me with that crutch was gone. So now, even now to this day, when I think back, you know, here it is 2006 and this was in 88. I know that somebody helped me in that very moment when I needed it the most.
And see, Betty, the thing that is so interesting when we have those, and now I have to tell my audience too, Betty is validating Brad's research. This is one smart cookie here. First of all, in 100 years ago, people used to wash the body of the dead. That was just the way it was. They prepared the dead. In some religions, that's still done, like the Mormon religion, the Jewish religion. It's a part of the process. But when we have an after-death communication, and Betty, and that's what you had, was an after-death communication, it imprints on us very, very strongly. There is a knowing that this is real, that this is that touch was real, that sense of strength is real. During those hard times when we reach out to the other side and ask for support and we feel like we get it, it's imprinted on us. It feels very, very real. I really appreciate you calling and sharing that with us.
You're welcome. It's not easy to do. It's just not easy to do. It brings back all the insecurities, and you're afraid somebody's going to look at you like you're a weirdo.
Oh, yeah. Betty, you're not a weirdo. Betty is not a weirdo. Okay, Betty, I really, really appreciate it. You did. You called it the right time to crack open the next segment. So thanks a bunch. I'll be talking to you too soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, but I rest my case. I know Betty. Betty is my cousin, and she is one smart cookie, and... But there it is, that sense of people are going to think I'm a weirdo, people are going to ridicule me, nobody's going to listen to me. She courageously did what used to be done hundreds of years ago. She went and lovingly prepared her mother's body, but then she got that sense that her mother was there supporting her through the whole thing. So, visitations with deceased relatives isn't just an educated American Judaic Christian experience. According to the Russian paper Pravda, it's an international experience, and I can validate that for you guys. A lot of the email that I've gotten over the years has come from around the world. But what's interesting about this experience is that it comes from a post-communist atheist world. I don't know how many of you have been over to Russia. I was over there a couple of years ago. Belarusia. And they still had statues of Lenin in the square, and anything to do with religion had basically been scraped off that corner of the world. But supposedly, a Russian woman was saved by doctors after spending a quarter of an hour in a coma. A 33-year-old Russian mother suddenly began feeling sick shortly after birthing twins. She was feverish. Doctors could not do anything to help her. Afterwards, her husband decided to take her to his local hospital, and she was admitted, and she was in serious critical condition and then suffered a cardiac arrest. 15 minutes later, okay, this woman was clinically dead for 15 minutes. Her heart began beating. However, she went into a coma. 8 days later, she managed to regain consciousness. And to the doctor's surprise, she was getting better very rapidly. Now, she had trouble recalling what had happened to her, how she had gotten sick, how she got to the hospital, but she did remember one very powerful dream, okay? We've talked on this show before about how dreams serve a purpose, but when we have a dream that allows us to reach over to the other side and make contact, it imprints on us. It's different than our other dreams. I saw my deceased relative, she said. I saw my grandmother, grandfather, parents, sister-in-law. I've been to the cemetery where all of them are buried. Afterwards, decided to visit the house where my grandmother and grandfather used to live. I kept knocking, but no one answered. Then I went to my parents' place. On my way there, however, something made me stop by their neighbors who were still alive. They let me in and made me feel at home. The following morning, I woke up at their house, glanced outside, and noticed that everything was covered in white snow. Once again, I was determined to visit the house of my deceased relative, and once again, he refused to let me in. Now, this is all in a dream. The woman's body managed to win the fight with the strange disease, and she completely regained her strength after this. And her doctors were, of course, stunned by her recovery because her heartbeat was nada, nowhere, for 15 minutes. And she suffered absolutely no physical damage. No one in our village thought I would survive, and I did see my relatives. So, did you know mothers still continue to mother from the other side? Betty just shared with us how her mother came to her during her moment of need and difficulty and when she needed a little bit of courage. In July of 2005, Gallup survey regarding American beliefs about ghosts had this to say. Supposedly, 1 in 3 Americans believe in ghosts. You know, I don't really like that term. I don't think any of my deceased relatives who are doing what they're doing on the other side like being called ghosts. The numbers, 32% of all adults say they believe that spirits of dead people can come back. Only 19 are unsure. In my research, I've recognized that mothers can often continue to mother their children from the other side. Case in point, I want you to listen to this email I just recently received. Dear Carla, my mother and I had a very unusually strong bond. I would like to preface telling you my experience with my mother's spirit by saying just a few things. I had a drug and alcohol addiction that nearly killed me. All during the years that I was lost to my disease, my mother would obviously worry about me constantly. I always made sure to call her every day, even when I was staying with gangs in the Bronx. They would walk me to the phone for protection so that I could call her. We have always been joined at the hip, and even up to the day she died, I would call her several times a day. I always let her know where I was and when I would be home, even at 42 years of age. My friends thought that this was pretty odd. I mean, this person's supposed to be a big old bad gangbanger, and they're calling their mom. But I understood that even though I was no longer putting myself in danger, my mother still couldn't get over the worry she experienced when I was in the throes of my addiction. So this person got sober and continued the practice of staying in contact with mother. She was my best friend and the only person on the planet that ever understood me. There was never any judgment on her part. She just loved me, and I refused to leave her side for 4 weeks just before she died, and the nurses even gave me a little bed to sleep on because they knew I wouldn't leave her. So, you know, that happens to a lot of people who get sober and get into recovery. They'll turn their lives around, and they really, they do. I've worked with lots and lots and lots of recovering addicts and alcoholics from all walks of life, and they'll get sober, and what they want to do is they become closer to their families, and they want to make amends. And so shortly after my mother died, I had the first of four dreams. She was lying in bed, and I remember her exhaling a large cloud of smoke. Okay, all you smokers, listen to this. She said, "We have to do something about that. I am a heavy smoker, and that was in part of the reason why she got so sick." So secondhand smoke, this person believes, got to the mother. Then my father walked into the room, who is also deceased, and didn't say a word. Just looked at me with a sad face, and I got up to give him a hug. I have been estranged from him for years. In the second dream, my mother came to my door and said that she wasn't sure that I would want her to visit. I told her that she could come anytime she wanted. The last two dreams had to do with my smoking. She would have a lit cigarette in her hand, look at me, and then just toss it. This is mom still wagging the finger at her child. But the most remarkable experience happened about 2 months ago. I have suffered from depression since I was a child and was having a terrible bout. My mother would always help me. She was the only one who could, especially since I don't take medication now, especially since I'm sober. Anyway, I had been crying all day and went to bed feeling like I was being sucked into a dark hole. As soon as I put my head on the pillow, I felt someone stroking my hair. I put my hand on my head, and the stroke continued. I did not feel the least bit frightened. Remember Betty said she felt like her mother was touching her shoulder? I thought maybe I had static in my hair or something, so I got up to go to the bathroom and went back to the bed, making sure to change positions. As soon as I laid down, the gentle stroking of my hair started again. Carla, as crazy as it sounds, I felt completely comforted by this. See, that's what mainstream science hasn't figured out, is that these experiences are so nurturing. I had an understanding that my mother had come to soothe me. If anyone had told me this would happen, I would be sure to say that I would run out of the door screaming. But to tell you the truth, I felt no such urge. I hadn't had any dreams or contact since, and I haven't told anyone about this except for my brother. Okay? Here is this incredibly comforting experience where this person who has had so much trauma with their life, and the one person who has stuck with them has been their mother, and mother passes, and mother comes back during times of stress. But this person doesn't feel comfortable sharing this with anybody. And mothers still appear to retain their personality on the other side. The following email is typical of nurturing from the afterlife. I tell you, I got a whole slew of these. Because my father was such a terrible dresser, my mother was in the habit of putting her silk scarves around the hangers of his outfits that matched. Isn't that cute? That's so cute. She would put her scarf around the neck of the hangers of slack shirts and ties that matched. My father became increasingly irritated by this practice as it made him feel like a child, so she quit doing this. A short time later, she died very suddenly. On the morning of her funeral, I walked into my father's bedroom, and he was sitting on the edge of the bed looking very pale and stunned. I asked him what was wrong, and he pointed to the back of the closet. There hung his black wool funeral suit, the suit he only wore to funerals and weddings. On the hanger was my mother's favorite scarf. No other scarf hung in that closet. Isn't that something? That's so sweet. There have been times, my mother died when I was 16 years old, and I have a picture, I've talked about this a little bit, I have a picture in my bedroom that my sister needlepointed. And there have been times when I have been very distressed. I mean, life is a drama. You know, it's a four-part miniseries. We've got our ups, we've got our downs, pain, good times. I mean, that's just life. It's the way it is. And during some of those really, really difficult times, I have asked my mother to come and visit me. And I have asked her to come and move my sister's picture. Just move it a little bit. And she's moved it. I'll wake up and she'll have moved it. And it's comforting, it's nurturing, it's mothering from the other side. No matter how old we are, if we've had a good relationship with our mother, we want to know that our mothers are still there for us. Third time's a charm. This is great. This is actually a wonderful story that I've had on file for quite some time. It was written by Shirley Drake Jordan. My daughter was 9 years old when my mother died at the age of 53. She adored my daughter and was constantly making doll clothes for her. Now, you and I have talked about how receptive children are. I was just talking to somebody a couple of days ago who was discussing how his niece had contact with her grandmother and how she had, thankfully, she had a mother who listened to her. We need to listen to our children if they report visitations from loved ones on the other side. These aren't imaginary friends. Following mother's death, I did my best to explain to my daughter where her grandmother's spirit was and how much she had loved her. 2 years passed before the first incident happened. We had moved into a new town and a new house, and my daughter was adapting to new friends. I got her involved with decorating her room, and we had wallpapered into the night. I overslept the next morning, and my daughter went downstairs to the kitchen by herself. Suddenly, she came running up the stairs, crying and telling me that her grandma was in the kitchen. I asked her to describe in detail what she had seen. She stopped crying and told me when she went into the kitchen, my mother was standing by the stove in an apron as if she were getting ready to cook breakfast for her. I held her and soothed her, and suddenly she stopped crying and pulled away from me. I know you don't believe me, Mommy, but I saw her. She was there. The thing that's so funny about interviewing children who have these experiences is that they're very adamant, and the sense is, well, what is wrong with you? I'm not stupid. I saw what I saw. I assured my 11-year-old daughter I did not doubt what she thought she saw. If Grandma would appear to anyone, sweetie, it would definitely be you. The next morning, she raced downstairs before I could get up and dress. Shortly, she came back up and told me her grandmother was there again and told her she would not appear to her anymore until she was grown up. So Grandma is setting some boundaries and saying, honey, I'm not coming back. I've shown up twice. I'm not going to be around until you're older. She said, my mother apologized for frightening her and told her she loved her and went away. So grandma is saying, look, I'm really sorry I scared you, sweetie. My daughter looked me straight in the eyes and asked, do you believe me? Oh, Mom, please believe me. I told my daughter I did and tried to look very convincing. 10 years later, my daughter was about to graduate from college and was taking a marriage goals and roles class with her fiancé. Boy, there's something more young folks should do. Learn about what marriage entails. Maybe the divorce rate would go down. She said she was sitting on the floor facing her fiancé, and the teacher told the couple to place their hands on each other's forehead and to try and read what they were thinking, getting in touch with your loved one. My daughter suddenly yelled, "Take your hands away, please. My grandmother is trying to talk to me." Her startled fiancé and the rest of the class sat quietly while my daughter smiled through a conversation with my mother. She could not wait to get home to call me about this third incident. She has never told me what my mom said to her, but she has mentioned the incident many times, and she always smiles. Another positive experience, contact. Do I believe her? Of course. Like I said, if my mother would appear to anyone, it would surely be to the grandchild she adored. By contacting my daughter, she was, in a way, contacting me. And then the author says, to all those women who will celebrate Mother's Day, know that there is no stronger love than that of a mother for her child or her grandchild. The ties that bind seem to be the ties that can never be severed. Happy Mother's Day. And this article can be found in Ghost Magazine. When spirit from the other side is trying to contact us, they will often use everyday mechanical devices to do so. In 2 weeks, we're going to talk about the telephone. I have a really good friend in Florida who she was contacted. This woman is an editor. She edits best-selling books. She edited John Bradshaw's best-selling books. This is one smart cookie. No one would say that she's a slouch. She hung out with Andy Warhol in the 60s, and when her mother passed away, she received a telephone call from her mother, and she always talks about how reassuring that was. But anyway, we're going to be talking about that in 2 weeks. But I want you to listen to the next account of mothering. This mom was willing to go to any lengths to let her adult child know she was doing just fine, And those on the other side, they will. They will do things. They will use mechanical devices to get our attention. My father-in-law knocked all the pictures off the wall to get our attention. Made me so mad, I kept hanging them up. He kept knocking them off. I kept hanging them up. He kept knocking them off. But this email comes to me from a really good friend of mine's website, Victor Zammit. Just plug his name into your search engine. He has an incredible website that's totally devoted to afterlife research. He lives in Australia. He's just a prince of a man. I did a show some time back. I don't know how this ended up on his site, but anyway, he sent this to me. My mother died the 1st of January, 2003. She had a bad chest infection that led to heart failure. It all happened very quickly over a period of about 4 days. I had a very strong feeling that she would die, even though the doctors, in accident and emergency, did not seem to think it was that serious at first, and were quite surprised at her death. So here, this woman passes away. Nobody is expecting her to die, but she does. Within a few minutes of her passing, I was speaking to her, telling her to pass on, and holding her hand. This is right before she passed. I clearly felt her finger and thumb make a very gentle but obvious grip on my hand. Now, what you folks need to understand is that when our loved ones are getting ready to pass, their care for us does not end. Another friend of mine was concerned because, well, he wasn't so concerned, but he was curious as to why his mother waited to die once he left the room. He was very, very close to her. They will caretake us, and they will wait until we leave. If they sense that we might be upset being with them when they pass, or it's hard for them to pass with us there, they will caretake till the very end. Anyway, it was like a reassurance that she had heard me and was okay. At the time, I thought it would be nice to believe that, but it was probably just some nerves twitching. However, the timing was quite perfect with what I was saying, and it was just the kind of thing my mother would do. When I got home with my brother, we noticed two white doves sitting on the tree just outside our garden. To us, it seemed to mean that both she and my dad were together. Have you ever had that sensation of I don't know, you're out and about and maybe you find, my husband always, every time we go on a trip, he asks his father for a sign that it'll be a safe trip. And his father's message to him is a penny. He'll find a penny. And before every single trip, 10 to 5 minutes before every single trip, my husband finds a penny. About an hour or so after being home, my car alarm system suddenly went off. I had been having trouble with the alarm and so had started not to activate it. I thought that perhaps because of all the upset, I may have done it inadvertently. This happened 3 more times that day. I was quite amazed as I specifically made sure not to activate it. This happened quite a few times over the next few days. It then seemed to stop for a week or so, but about 2 weeks after her passing, I decided to go to a spiritualist church. Just after the meeting, now a spiritualist church, what that is, gang, if you don't know what that is, just plug spiritualist church into your search engine and you'll learn a whole lot. It's where people learn how to become mediums. It's where they learn how to make contact with the other side. These folks believe that anybody is capable of making contact with a little dedication and persistence. Just after the medium announced that he had given the last message, I was feeling very disappointed, and suddenly I could hear my car alarm outside. At the time, I never thought anything of it, but realized afterwards that the timing was amazing. My own mother passed away years ago, but every Mother's Day, I do the following visualization. And just because our moms have moved on, that doesn't mean that we can't have a relationship to them. Aside from this visualization, one of the things that I do periodically is I will keep a journal. I will write to my mother. I'll write about what's going on in my life. I'll write about my sadness. I'll write about my challenges. I'll talk about what I'm upset about or angry about. And sometimes what I do is I'll take that material, take that letter, and I'll burn it in the fireplace, and then I'll close my eyes and I'll visualize the smoke from the letters going to the other side and reaching my mother. Now, this visualization is a very sweet one, and it's one I use in my own clinical practice when people come in and they'll sit down and they'll say that they're having a really hard time, that their mother passed away, their father passed away, and they're just missing them terribly. And what they will do is they will sit and they will close their eyes, and I'll suggest to them that they visualize the sea, a seaside, a beach scene. And that what they do is they visualize that they're sitting on the shore and they're looking out at the ocean and they're watching the gulls and they're watching the dolphins and they're watching the boats. And in the distance, what they see is they see their mother walking down the beach, whole and happy and complete. And mother comes and sits across from them on the sand and takes their hands and says, "I am so happy to see you." And then they reach over and they embrace. And typically when there is that embrace, the emotions surface. And as I said before, you can have a very strong belief in the afterlife, but that sense of loss, that longing for that touch, for that nurturing, for that anchor, that's still going to be there. They've moved on. There hasn't been a loss of love, but what has changed is that for us, we don't know how to reach out and touch anymore. And so we have to learn how. And then have a conversation with mother. Have a conversation about what's going on with job and children and life in general and spirituality. And then to ask mother for feedback and to turn off your own brain. Turn off your brain. Don't try to predict what would be said or try to imagine what would be said. Just imagine sitting there and just try to listen. Listen for the message. That's what's so important. Now, for those of you who have had difficulties with your mothers, guess what? Newsflash. You can resolve some of that stuff, even if they have passed away and are on the other side. Just because our deceased relatives are living on the other side, that does not mean that we don't finish our unfinished business with them. You can sit down and you can write out all of your resentments, gripes, hurts, anger, whatever it is that's unresolved between you and your mother. You can sit down and you can write that out on a piece of paper. And after you get it written out, it's very useful to share that with a therapist, a clergy person, a best friend, to hear yourself reading it, just to hear your own voice. There's something unique about, you know, we can write letters and we can get things down on paper, but when we're saying it out loud, it makes it very, very real. And what you do is you read that. And then what you do is you close your eyes and you visualize your mother and you visualize sharing this with her. And if you're still angry with your mother, you know what? It's okay. I bet if you ask your mother, is it okay for me to still be angry with you regarding past resentments, past losses, past hurt, what you're going to get back is, yes, it's okay for you to be angry for as long as you need to be angry. And if you need to get active and pick up a bat or a tennis racket and pound on the bed or, you know, go hit golf balls or do something to discharge that anger, go ahead and do that. Because you know what? If you don't do that work, you'll never make peace. You won't make peace. So if you want to make peace, if you've got some leftover resentment, those are just a few things that you can do to take care of yourself in your relationship with your mother. Well, time stands still when you're having a good time, and there's that clock. That clock is just about to strike 9. It's almost time for me to sign off, gang. I want to thank those of you who called in tonight. My buddies from Longview, Texas, and my cousins from Corpus Christi. It was a delight to hear both of you. As usual, it's been a pleasure to be your afterlife tour guide. If you have a comment about tonight's show, please email me at drsbrandon, drsbrandon, at sbcglobal.net, or plug BBS Bloggin' into your search engine and leave your comments on one of the many fine message boards. While surfing BBS, check out the other fantastic radio programming offered. There's all sorts of fun stuff, gang. Seriously. It's better than TV. And remember, in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about telephone calls. We will be talking about the telephone calls many of you have reported to me receiving from the dearly departed. As National Enquirer as this sounds, believe it or not, it's a very, very common occurrence. This is Dr. Carla Wills Brandon. Sleep deep, sleep tight, and I'll be talking with you in a couple of weeks.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.